Welcome to the TTPOA Podcast, a podcast for SWAT officers, military, and all first responders. We'll be talking training, tactics, and leadership with the best subject matter experts around. Here are your hosts, Derek and Brandon.
What's going on, TTPOA? All right, season 3, episode 6. Brandon, how many have we knocked out?
Six.
I know, it's crazy, right? We've done 6 podcasts in 2 days.
Although I don't know if 6 will ever get aired after 5 gets aired. We might be getting banned.
If you're listening
by
to this, we may have skipped number 5 on purpose. I don't know. I can't decide.
I'm still trying to recover from
that. I can't
that
decide if we're going to air that one or not.
I think we should, though. Yeah. Let's just throw it out there. Yeah. Put our man shit on the table and let's just roll.
So I was walking the floor earlier, or at the debrief, and somebody came up to me and goes, "Hey, do you guys do all these podcasts at the conference?" And I go, "Yeah, we do, right? Because it's hard for us to get together with our schedules."
Yeah.
So for the guys who are questioning that, we do 6, 7, 8 podcasts at the conference, and then at the competition, when Brandon and I come back together, we'll try to knock out a couple more. That's how we get our podcast done throughout the year. So yeah. So if you're listening and you have the question, this is how we do it. Yep. It's the most efficient way that we can figure out how to do this thing and get get yearly or monthly podcasts
out. It whips your ass.
It does.
I mean, it's not like laying roof in August in Texas, but it's pretty close.
But I will tell you, I'm actually geeking out over this next one because it's kind of like, it's kind of our thing.
Also, too, people that don't reveal a curtain, I'm kind of the guy who gets the guest and kind of organizes that, and Derek does his deal, and we stay in our own lanes. And I knew you would like this, even though I didn't tell you what we were doing.
It's I mean it's cool.
And even so, to reveal the curtain even more, I called Chris. "Hey man, you just got here? Yeah. You ready to do a podcast? You just got called out? Seriously? Yeah, in 10-15 minutes." Same with Gabe. He was in the shower. "Okay, man, I'll be there in 10-15 minutes." So,
our guests are Chris and Gabe. And Gabe, thank you for putting clothes on.
Yeah, of course.
Right? Dude, and when you came in, you did.
You smelled good,
you smelled really nice. Yeah. Not going to lie.
Special cologne.
So it is funny. So Gabe stayed at our house, I guess, last year when Brokos came down to do a lead faucet CQB class. So me and Gabe teach with Dan on the road sometimes. And so we were hosting that class, and so he needed Gabe and I because it was a big class. And my wife was like, "Man, I don't know what's in that room. He smells so good, that cologne." So guess what? I wear the same cologne Gabe does now.
Wow. So you're saying that? So your wife is thinking about Gabe?
Yes. She smells yes. You. That's it. Yeah.
We're cologne brothers.
There you go.
So like Brandon said, man, we got Chris from Arizona, and we got Gabe from California. We're not going to use any last name or agencies, right? Because these guys are still active and doing what they do. So, Gabe, you want to go first, man? You're staring at me with those gorgeous eyes. Kind of gives us a little bit of background about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm current law enforcement officer out of California. Been a cop for a little over 15 years. Last 11 assigned to my SWAT team. I've been on the full-time side the last 9-plus years, so I'm one of our team leaders and involved with training and bringing in trainers.
What's the op tempo like where you're at?
It varies year to year, but it seems like it's been upticking. So anywhere from 150 to 175 ops a year. And that's varied depending on majority of them are high risk warrants. Mm-hmm. And then assisting investigations and patrols with call out. So
yeah, absolutely. Chris?
Oh, well, I've been a cop for about, I think, 24 years. I was on my agency's team for 13, and now I'm at firearms teaching full time. I've got my finger in a lot of different programs.
Now, your SWAT tempo, your career, how many average a year?
I don't know, 300 and something search warrants.
Yeah.
Several thousand actual call outs.
Yeah.
You're a big department out in Arizona.
Big department out in Arizona. So now you're in the firearms training. Is that like where the SWAT guy goes usually when he gets done with SWAT?
I wouldn't say it's pretty average. It's not. We're trying to get more dudes to promote out of SWAT instead of...
Yeah, so are we, but it just never happens, right?
It's a hard thing to leave.
We're too dumb.
Well, no, you know what? It's a hard thing to leave.
It's a hard thing to give up.
It's a hard thing to leave, but it was time. Everybody's got an expiration date, and you kind of reach a point where I was like, I can't fucking do this.
So what was your aha moment where you're like, fuck, this is it?
I was just burned out.
Really?
I was completely smoked mentally.
On the gas too long.
Yeah, I could not mentally handle it anymore. And I just like, I need a fucking break.
Well, that's good though. Maturity tells you that because everybody has a shelf life, especially if you're on the gas for that long, because you're a detriment to the team. And that's not, you never want to be that. And it's hard to admit I'm a detriment, even though it's not a physical detriment because I can't shoot, I can't do the job. It's the mental side. And that's more important than anything else. I mean, that mental side is huge.
Yeah, I started asking myself, like, every not every call out, but almost every call out, it would end up being like, what the fuck are we doing? God damn it. And like being pissed off because we'd do some stupid shit. And I realized it's maybe I'm the fucking problem. Maybe I'm the one that's getting a little too grumpy with this. And
well,
I
that's
need to
huge,
do something
though.
Else.
I mean, that's awesome to have self-reflection on that. That
so
really is.
How old were you when you left the team?
45.
45.
Yeah.
So what's the average age and time or tenure on that team?
So it's changed. I went over the team in 2006. And at that time I had 7 years on, 7.5 years. And I was told there's zero chance of you making it. You got to be here, here, and here first. You got to average about 10 years would be fast. So I was the first 7,000 serial number to make the team after 7 years. But now we've got dudes jumping over there in 3 years. It's been a change.
Does that go back to just necessity, or are they solid dudes, or like is a team short?
100% solid dudes. The selection process is strong. The probationary period of a year is strong, and they are getting proven dudes even in 3 years. It's just that is their environment they belong in, and it's you don't need to make a dude wait 10 years to be a SWAT cop. If they've got the potential and they've got the physicality and they've got the ability to learn, maybe you can get them in there sooner, and then that just becomes what they do.
Yeah. So how many dudes on that team?
We used to have 55, and it's shrinking. I've been gone from the team for almost 2.5 years, and I think we're under 40.
Gable?
We're at 45.
45? And what's the average age and tenure over there?
I think I'm on the older side. I'm 40 this month, but...
Congratulations. Welcome to the club.
It's funny talking about this because I find myself in that same boat. I've been a team leader for the last four years. And you get pushed to promote. Hey, it's your time to bump up and go to sergeant. It's like, I go to work every day and love what I do. Mm-hmm. I enjoy it. I enjoy everything, every aspect of my job. I enjoy it. I enjoy leading the younger guys. And I feel like I'm still an asset in the position that I am now. So pulling me out of that environment. And I think part of it is building up the next generation to take your spot too, right?
Yes.
If that's not there, then why are we so quick to just, it's your time. So just go. And it's like, I think it's an individual decision based on what you have to offer and what you bring to the table, whether you're an asset or identifying, hey, you know, I'm getting to that point where maybe my mind's not in anymore. Maybe I'm not 100% showing up to training. And then maybe that should be the time that you decide, hey, I'm going to step away and try to push promotion.
I think it's a hard transition too, because I've never really wanted to promote. Cause I'm like, if I promote, I get off the team. I don't want to do that. I'm still that dog that wants to go chase after the ball and shit. But like you said, I want to build the next generation up. But it's also, we've had an issue with our team is just we've had so many older guys leave, and then that vacuum comes in with new guys, and then whatever reason those guys leave. And so there's always a vacuum of having young guys. So to promote a guy to a team leader spot, I'm always like, man, it's never a knock on the individual. It's more of I want to preserve you and your career to realize – hey, there's still some stuff that you need to do before you're a team leader to get all that piss and vinegar out, because you have to take a step back as a team leader and go, hey, man, my guys get to run this. I'm planning this operation, but I'm putting you in the best position. Well, if you don't have enough experience to do that, I know I would have felt if I'd have been team leader young in my career, I'm like, shit, I missed out on a lot of the, I want to do the cool shit, because as a team leader, you don't get to do the cool shit anymore.
Yeah. You know
that's a hard balance.
When we were full time and as a young SWAT dude, that's all I wanted to do. Right. I want to go to SWAT. And so, you know, I busted my ass to get there. I never thought about promoting because I wanted to do,
fuck no,
I want to do this shit until, you know, I mean, I'm still doing it now on a part-time team as a team leader, but I mean, I wanted to fucking do this shit my whole career.
Yeah. And the thing is like, I know our four personalities. If you said, hey, right now, fucking the weirdest bunch of crazy shit happens, I need y'all four to go take care of that house because some bad shit happened, we'd be like, okay, let's go. That's just our personalities, and I don't think we'll ever leave that. I don't think it ever – now does it dissipate? Like, I don't want to do that every fucking day, like the tempo stuff, but the drive is always there, and I think that's where we talk about the young SWAT guys coming in. If you have that attitude from day one – that's the fucking guy I want. Yeah. I want the guy who goes, hey, man, call me up anytime. I'm ready to go do the hard shit to go get bad motherfuckers off the street.
Now, Gabe, you've been a team leader for how long?
Last 4 years.
So I know for me, the transition from like dude to team leader, it was kind of rough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the same boat. So I got I got moved to an assistant team leader position. I was there for probably less than a year, and we had a individual lateral to another agency, a good friend of mine, my team leader. And it's like, okay, congratulations, you're up. And it's like, I did not feel that I was in that position. Like, I think it takes a lot, and it's a big responsibility, and you kind of get thrown to it. And it's like, okay, we'll figure this out on the go. And it's like, you're trying to get as much advice and look to other team leaders and try to pull from their experience. But
yeah, you know, we, on my team, we had a big shakeup, and a new ad administration came in, and they did what they thought they needed to do. So they busted up our team
at a conference.
We were literally at a conference. Some of us were here, and they're like, oh man, sorry to hear about that. We're like, what are you talking about? Oh, you guys didn't hear, your new chief just busted you guys up to part-time. And we're like, what? Oh, wow. Yeah. So everybody goes, start drinking and fucking cry.
But, and y'all did.
Yeah.
Helped y'all.
Yeah. We all did. But, you know, like, so the new group of guys, because some of the senior leadership on that team said, fuck this, we're out. And I get it. You know, feelings were hurt, and kind of things happen, and I get it. And then the new group of guys voted on team leaders, and I got voted as one of the team leaders. And I was like, holy shit. Like, I don't know if I'm ready for that. And then I have a hard time too transitioning from being a dude doing stuff to now being a dude kind of managing and moving parts and pieces around. Yep. But the older I get, I'm 44. I'm like, okay, this is, I got this. I can have a little bit longer shelf life. You know, as you talked about being kind of that team leader. Were you ever a team leader, Chris?
I think you could probably put it that way. We called it a two guy. So it was the responsible for making a lot of decisions being put in there. We had supervisors who were sergeants who were responsible for the overall
promotional deal,
It's just kind of, you're into that environment. I think a lot of dudes I think Ben and I were talking about it once. Like, when do you stop believing you're the student and actually understand you're the professor? When do you actually know that you have enough time and you understand how things should go, and guys are going to look to you anyway for advice, and you're making the decisions en route. Like, you're making decisions on a tax surveillance. So you're making decisions in the house, a room over from a hostage situation. Yeah. And you're the one doing like the main decision-making recommendations, and it's just someone else's approval. So it's your call, and you have to stand by it.
Yeah. And that is a new, that's when you're thrown in that role for the first time, you're like, oh shit. Like, this is my baby.
Yeah, shit. Trust me.
I've been the same way. And I'm like, whoa, this is, because very similar, like we said, hey, guys leave, and then poof, the vacuum gets sealed, and then now you're up. And it's one of those deals like, okay, man, this is.
But, you know, I will say our new admin is completely backing us 100% with what we're doing. And as a team leader, I may not even have a sergeant on scene on that HR. And I'm saying, hey, let's get a charge on the door and let's go ahead and make entry because of this. Yeah. And admin is 100% behind us.
Well, I think it was cool. So not to divert what we're, but just to add to that, like, we did a dual op not too long ago with his agency and my agency, and we're doing the big debrief. And so they had their plan. They already had their guys come over and look at the target that we're hitting. Was an apartment complex. So building, and they're hitting this building. We're hitting this building. And during the brief from our narcotics, some stuff came up, and I heard it, and I was like, if I was on their team, I would question something. I'm like,
so what happened was, it was different intel the morning of the op than what we were given prior. So when we did our scouting and intelligence portion, we planned it for the intel that we got previous.
Shocker.
And in the middle of the, like, we're getting ready to, you know, do our brief, suit up and go. Some new intel came out, and I looked at my boss, and my boss looked at me. And he goes, go handle it. So I grabbed a couple of the dudes in the explosive breach.
And I'm seeing this because I'm thinking the same thing. And I'm looking over them, and I see that. I'm like, okay, I'm hoping they're doing what I'm – not that I'm beyond, but I'm like, we're all tracking, I think. Yep. And then we went over there, and I'm like, good, I'm glad y'all fucking did that. And I'm going to do my stuff, and I know they're taking care of their stuff now. But I think that's just part of the experience. And I think that's – when we do these podcasts, for me – that validates what we're doing as a team, that validates what I'm doing as a team, and also makes me question, okay, hey, are we doing, because I hear y'all, and it's like, okay, we're all kind of on the same page and stuff. And that, to me, this is part of the training. And the guys are going to hear this and either agree or disagree. And if they disagree, that's fine too. Like, that's why we have so many different opinions on here, not to just think Derek and Brandon opinions, because we're idiots.
I mean, but, no, I'm always right. I don't
know. You are true. Yeah. That is true. But I don't know where the fuck we were going with that. But
training.
Anyway, training. So I know, Gabe, you have been involved in training for a lot, just bringing guys out.
Yes.
You didn't want to be the big fish in your little pond. Exactly. You recognized early on in your career, hey, I need to bring guys in to give us knowledge and give us a different perspective on things. And at the end of the day, we'll cuss and discuss as a team what we want to do and how we want to do it and stuff. So where did that come from?
Well, it came from just individual development, right? So, like, obviously I wanted to improve and be a better shooter and stuff like that. So you start going to all these trainings and it becomes just a culture, something that you enjoy doing. Like, you see small improvements. And then I ended up making my team, and it's like, okay, continuing down this path of improving. And then you realize, like, I want everybody around me to improve. So let me start pulling guys out that I've trained with before to come and host them and have it, like, either be for my entire team or just local teams in the area just to come train. And it's just always been understanding that you have to test your capabilities by having somebody come in from the outside and see what you really have to offer, whether it's tactically or just with your hard skills. And it's funny because people think around the United States, oh, I'm on a SWAT team. That means that you're some phenomenal shooter and you're like some tactician.
Hell no.
That's not necessarily the case. And obviously every team's different, but I'm blessed to be where I'm at and the agency that I'm at, that we have a lot of training time and a lot of funds to bring in a lot of people.
Yeah.
And
because your team has brought in some of the same guys that we bring in to TTPOA and stuff. So
yeah.
I think that's probably a rare thing. I think you have a lot of support from your department with the financial side of that.
Yeah,
100%. Some of these guys in is not cheap at all.
No, yeah. and I could talk about some of the stuff, but yeah, we do have, outside of just the department funding, we have negotiated items where the department provides a stipend of about $10,000 per person on the agency for continuing education.
What? Per person?
Every person on the agency gets $10,000 a year to either use for college or continuing education, which most of our guys are using it for training classes and
no SWAT guy going to college. Come on.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, that's remarkable.
So do you guys use that? Like, so you said 40 dudes, right?
45 guys.
45, yeah. So do you guys use $45,000?
So our guys push the training. I would tell you this, the reason why the department pushes that so hard, you would think that a lot of people use it, right? Mm-hmm. There's few thousand people in my agency, majority of them don't ever use it. So
are you serious?
Yes, 100%.
It started everywhere.
Yeah, when I first started, it was a $2,000 bank, and then it went to $3,000, and then it jumped to $10,000. And it's like, why is it going so high? It's like, because nobody uses it.
Because no one's using it.
The fund's just sitting there. So
that is ridiculous. I would use this shit.
Hell yeah. I'd be going, I'm going to Florida this weekend, or California or whatever. It's August in Texas. I'm going to California in August.
But that speaks to the executive command understanding that, hey, training is critically important. And they actually want to push that to the guys. Like, they disallowed monthly membership to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu to be approved for department reimbursement. So
we tried. Wow. We're trying that now. We're trying to get that rolled out and trying to figure out the best way to do
that's
that.
Huge.
So I may have to get with you offline and see how you guys got that approved. Chris, so that high op tempo, right? Training, did training come first or on the job training operationally?
It would depend. When I got to the team, there's a journey I went through, and I think a lot of guys will go through when they get to a team. It's, you're new, it's interesting, it's different. You're getting exposed to different things you've never even knew existed before. Even if you're listening, you come to these conferences or you listen to these podcasts, you hear guys talk about things, but if you don't have firsthand experience being a part of one, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So I got to the team, we would shoot constantly. But you don't really, like, you think the skill level's higher because your skill level is so low.
Yeah.
When you really compare it and look at things, it's your baseline skill level's here. There's guys on the squad or the team that are a little bit better than you, and you think, wow, that's good, because you haven't been exposed to something outside or seen it. And the first time I actually got exposed to the USPSA competitive shooting and all those other things was on a junior squad. We had a more junior squad that worked nights. And I ended up transitioning to that squad because they had a better, in my opinion at the time, they had a better work ethic. They wanted to be, they were very hungry.
Yeah.
And I actually learned a ton from these guys, but that's when I realized I sucked at shooting, just flat out. Like, I was good enough, air quotes. I was good enough. I'd been in a shooting at that time, my first shooting, I'd already been in one. And it was like, oh, I survived that. I must be good enough. Right. And then you realize what you're actually capable of.
Yeah.
I even wrote an email to everybody in the unit. I called it Notes from a Hypocrite. And I kind of like went into kind of documenting like, hey, this is why we need to get better. And I got in trouble for it, but because I was still newish. But
new guy, shut the fuck up.
New guy, shut the fuck up. And then yeah, all these fancy things you're doing. I'm like, I shoot faster than you and more accurate than you. And I can move better than you. What is wrong with that? Yep. And getting guys to understand it, it started to pick up and started to become part of the general culture of the unit. Guys are like, we need to get better. But you're still not exposed to what good is.
Yeah.
Like you think it, you see it internally.
Well, so that's why you bring in these people and then you're like, holy shit, that person is good.
Yeah.
And how can I get there? Because I'm assuming all of us here, and I'm you know, I just met you guys, but we're all kind of that person, that type A, that like, if I see Chris do something, I'm like, fuck, I can probably do that. You know, so I'm going to try to challenge what you're doing. Same thing with Gabe. So yeah, you bring in somebody that can really shoot or really do something that you're trying to learn. It's really eye opening.
I think we'll hit it. I think we'll get into it, but like bringing in an instructor and they can show you what's possible and your dudes will demonstrate it in like a 2 or 3 day class. Like, wow, like, hey, you got better. You got better. If that's where it ends, it was a waste of fucking time.
100%.
It was just a waste of time because you're going to suck in a month.
Yep.
You're going to be right back to where you were before. So how do you, I think we'll talk about it, like culturally, how do you, you know, get guys to want to do shit better?
When did you see the, oh shit, like I'm not near like where that instructor is moment for you? That
I think the first one I did was one of our guys, Mike, was a single stack state champion in USPSA. So I went and shot my first match with him and got my dick kicked into the dirt. And I was like, I'm a fucking SWAT guy.
Yeah.
Like, this is bullshit. And I kind of got a little offended by it at first. Yeah. And then I've over time learned how to control my ego a little bit and just start asking questions. Like maybe it is beneficial.
So I think you kind of got close there. Over time, you're able to control your ego. We have to let those egos go. Yep. We cannot have an ego in this world because there's always somebody bigger, better, faster, stronger, 100%. All of that. Right. So, yeah, I mean, that's the problem that I see is the egos on the young SWAT guy, right? They know it all. They know everything. They don't want to listen to the old guy, the former guy that was doing it way before, you know, they even thought about doing it. So,
yeah. Well, it's funny. We were talking with Brian Williams. It's going to be several months from now when this airs, but yesterday. And, you know, he was the first police officer in Texas to be a GM.
Oh, nice.
In the early 90s. And then he became a GM as a chief of police. And we were like, I don't know if that's done. I don't know. But he was talking about some of the stuff that we're doing now with TTPOA was for the practical shooting. He's like, man, he goes, I've been pushing that in the 90s and the early 2000s, but it was never catching on because of just the culture. And now there's, as much as Instagram is bad, it's also a really good tool.
Yeah.
And it's just like anything else. You just have to balance it. But that to me has really opened up a lot of eyes and go, oh, wait a minute, this is possible. And I think like I've seen you on Prankus Med podcast and Ben Steger and you as well, Gabe, and I've been on there. And I think that's as much as controversy it is of, oh, you're bashing these instructors or you're doing this. The fucking conversation is getting out there, and that's all we want. I mean, we had a conversation with you, Chris, while we were sitting down of just that same thing. Is like, all we want is to have a conversation. This is what this podcast is about. Is why do you feel like it's this way, or why do you like this? Why do you like that? Because at the end of the day, we're four individuals. We're not going to agree 100% on every fucking single thing, but we can also have just a balance of, hey, this is the way I have done this and have been successful. And we've had operations done this way. Hey, at the end of the day, there's some commonality of why we can do this. And we have a conversation and we can leave each other with respect, but a lot of this stuff doesn't happen that way. So, let's kind of go down that rabbit trail of what have you seen in the industry with training as far as, hey man, this is my baby and you can't rip it out of my arms because I am fucking right. And the reason why I'm right, because this is my marketing tool. What's your thoughts on that? What have you seen and how do you look at that as far as legitimacy in training?
Well, one aspect, I think we've come a long way with away from the, hey, competition's going to get you killed on the streets thing.
Right.
And I remember the first time getting into that aspect of shooting, I was trying to take a Ben Steger class probably 5-6 years ago, and it was a private closed course, and he required you to have a B classification to take the class. So I'm like, all right, what do I got to do? I'm hitting up my buddies that shoot competition. He's like, all right, first we got to get you a gun for a division. I'm like, okay, what's limited division? So or production or whatever. So borrowed a gun and had one built eventually. But then I started shooting these competitions. They're like, dude, you got to shoot classifiers to get the classification. So I'm like literally cherry picking matches in the area. I'm like, hey, dude, it has a classifier. I got to go shoot it.
Yeah.
So I shot like four or five matches, got the B classification. I had some great classifiers and some that were just terrible, but it got me to my B. So I was like, all right, I'm in Ben's class.
Yeah.
And then it was just, again, it was an eye opener to see what's actually possible. It's like, holy wow. Like I watch YouTube videos. You watch, like, you know, eventually you start getting to know people like Rob Latham and JJ Ricaza and Max Michelle and all these guys that you're like, wow, that's actually possible. I don't know if I can do that, but I know I can strive to try to get to that point or whatever. So understanding that is 100% viable for law enforcement officers to approach training in a practical way, and understanding that shooting at realistic speeds, I think, is a benefit for officers. Coming from a law enforcement background, where in the academy, it's like everything's super slow and accuracy based, and you have all the time in the world to shoot a target at 5 yards, and it's like that's unrealistic to what we'll actually encounter in the field. So, like, let's look at something a little bit maybe more dynamic, something that you actually have to think and process information at speed and then engage something very rapidly, but also maintain accuracy too. So I think that's something that I think, and it is making a push. I remember being, you know, I've been friends with Mike Pinot for quite a few years, and it's like, he kept pushing, say, hey man, we need to go shoot competitions. But like now it's like full bore.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the way that I see my improvements starting to come, is getting out there and just shooting some matches and just seeing where you fall apart and stuff like that. But
it's so practical for what we do. My vision of when I do anything like that, it's always like, this is the end of a foot chase, and now the aha moment's about to happen, and let's go. And that's kind of how I look at it, just from my mindset of what I'm doing and putting it into, or hey man, I just entered a room, this is happening. So I can relate it back to police work, but it all is the moving, the shooting part of it. Cause at the end of the day, it's shooting. We brought in Rob Latham years ago, and we've had world champions come in through TTPOA to teach shooting for several years now. And we're really ramping that up anymore. So the names that you said, all those guys have been through and taught and continue to teach. So the training's out there and stuff. So what's been your experience, Chris?
I got a couple things I want to hit. Like the training industry, Instagram, I don't got a problem with it. Like that's how we all got together.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you're building your training curriculum, if you're building your techniques, if you're building the things you want to teach other people off of your one event, it's probably fucked up and wrong.
Yeah.
Like I've done, of the hostage rescues that I've done, two or three of them contradict each other. Yes. Where if we had done it this way, it doesn't go against what we were trying to accomplish in the other one.
Exactly.
So if you've done one hostage rescue or two hostage rescues, and that's what your CQB methodology is built on, because we did it this one time, you're cherry picking like a rare event. And just because it worked in that situation doesn't mean it's going to work for everybody else. You're getting away from the principles, right?
Yep.
So everything, you have to understand, what am I trying to accomplish? And in the foot pursuit that ends in a shooting, in the end, it's a shooting problem.
Yep.
And the ability to do that at speed and accurate, you know, accurate at speed is what you're after. So find something that lets you do it, whether it's USPSA, IDPA, or just practicing on your own, taking some instruction. But in the end, like arguing about this method doesn't apply to me is, we'll find out how to apply it to you.
Yeah.
Like stop. It's your level of commitment. And I think we're going to get into that here in a minute too. No. Your level of commitment and trying to be good at what you have to be good at, the high liability, low likelihood events, you have to be freaking really good at.
Yeah.
I ran our high angle program for a while. Like I have to be good at knots because I'm sticking you on one and I'm throwing you off the side of a building to come in this window. Like the shooting part, you just have to be good at. The accuracy has to be there. Yes. There's like arguing, well, that's the old way and it's bullseye shooting. Great. It has benefit to you, because old dudes with fucking revolvers back in the '70s were smoking bad guys with one or two rounds. Why the fuck can't you do it with 17? Right. And why are you sending 12 of them into the neighborhood? Because maybe we are showing guys one way to shoot, but we're not letting them access the ability to control the gun at speed, which is just part of a, I think, a natural human reaction.
Yeah.
These guys panic in the moment, or they just, you know, they make Plastic Jesus sing as fast as he can, but they've never run it at that speed.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And been held accountable for the round. So given the opportunity, we're not saying shoot 20 splits. I'm saying shoot 20 splits in training and see where you fall apart.
Yep.
So that, like, when Matt and I talk about the speed of an actual engagement, like faster than real life, controlling 30s and 40s with precision becomes easy.
Yeah.
It's effortless. You don't have to think about it. It just becomes the way that you shoot.
For that,
I don't know. There's so much just silliness where people argue over nothing.
No, I agree. So I've been in two shootings in my career, and they're both way different. The speed was different on one, and the speed was different. I mean, and totally, one was a pistol, one was a rifle. And so those experiences, I look back and I look at it, it's like, I can't even compare them. What I can compare is the preparation and the training that I did to prepare me to make those decisions, knowing what to do, when to do it. And I was prepared to do it very quickly. That right there, you could never argue that. It's the application of when you can do it, when you can't do it, and stuff. So let me ask you this. I know y'all both compete. So when you go into a competition or you're setting up training and you do things, and we love the A box, yes, and we're doing hit factors and stuff, but you run a stage, and hey, you have, you know, all alphas and two Charlies, and it was a good time. So do you look at that and go, yeah, I wish I'd had all alphas? So there's, like, to me, there's always two things that I'm gauging in: where I want to be, and then where I am. And where I am, do I feel comfortable that when test day comes, that I'm going to perform and at a high level because of the training that I put in? So for me, I have two mindsets of where I would love to be and where I'm pushing myself to be, where I currently am, and the confidence that I'm where I'm at currently. And when I put on my gear to do my job, that I have confidence that I will step up to the performance on demand. Do y'all look at it that way, or how do y'all look at it? Because I would love to hear y'all's opinion on that.
So I don't know. I think I look at it a little different.
Okay.
If I run a stage and I get a fucking Delta two Charlies, I want to know why I got them. I don't give a shit that I got them. I want to know how the hell did that happen.
Right.
Because if I don't know how, if I, like, where did that come from? I screwed something up. And it's a vision problem.
I go back. Vision is a huge thing for me. I'm like, shit, I didn't do what I needed to do on that.
And I can recognize that in a stage, but those are opportunities that are given to me to perform on demand, and I did not. So why didn't I? What was I doing on this transition going across that I didn't even see that Delta happen?
Yeah.
Like, how is that possible? When I do see it happen and I make it up, I'm like, cool, I saw that happen. Yeah. I am capable of it in the moment when I'm doing what I need to do. So I need to focus on that. I don't really focus on, like, oh, I screwed this up. It's like, how did I miss that? Let me kind of dial it in to that.
No.
I got thoughts.
When you said that, I was like, I do that when I look at it. I'm like, that's a vision issue, or shit, that was a grip issue. Those are my two, just from learning from some of the guys that we all talk about, Ben and Matt and Matt Little and some other guys. The two, vision and grip are the things. And I always go back, fuck, dude, my bitch hand was this, or man, why did I fucking shoot when I saw that dot? And I was staring at the dot, and it was fucking in that shoulder area where the D is. Why did I fucking do that and stuff? What about you, Gabe?
Yeah, same thing. I look at it as a training evolution, and it's like I've dived in enough now to be around good shooters, and they're all videotaping with you know, how, like, head freaking cameras, and they're having somebody record it, and they're going through the stuff. So I dived in and did the same thing. So now every stage I run, I have a little camera, I have somebody record it, and I go after the fact, and again, you're trying to process and see things occur as they're occurring. And it's like, hey, I know when the stage is over, I know I threw a Delta on one of the targets back here.
Yeah.
And then you walk through, check the targets, like, okay, cool, that's my Delta. I saw that I threw that Delta. Maybe I was moving a little too fast and I was trying to transition before, you know, I had the aiming scheme that I needed to get that shot. But I think, like, obviously you want to be as fast as you humanly can and have all the alphas you can get, but you have to also understand what's acceptable for the stage, right? So, and that's why I'll lean towards USPSA over IDPA, because it's like, I'd rather push my processing speed and be able to see as fast as I can and get acceptable targets that will provide me a good score for the game that we're playing. But they're good hits, alpha or Charlie or close charges, but understanding that, hey, if you shoot a Delta or a Mike or a no shoot or something like that, you're having severe penalties, right? So it's playing the game, but also understanding, like, processing information at speed, understanding what you're actually doing. And then I like now to go back and review, and it's like, okay, this is what I did, and I can actually see it because the helmet, the camera that goes on the hat, it's like, it's pretty much eye level what you're seeing as it's going down. So I like to review it and be like, okay, cool. I was messing up here, but I can see myself mess up. Okay, what do I got to do to make this correction? So for me, it's interesting to see like just a different methodology of shooting and understanding processing at speed. So yeah. And vision.
So even with looking at why I did this, why did I shoot and I have not the outcome that I wanted? Mm-hmm. Do you also have to compartmentalize that and go, okay, at the end of the day, I know when I go back on the streets or whatever the case is call outs or anything, I feel very, very confident and I'm going to perform at what I need to do. That bullet's going to go in the body where I want it. Do you think that reinforces that mindset of I have confidence in what I'm doing?
I think it's the only thing that's going to give it to you, because you say, yeah, I have done it before under time and under pressure.
Yeah.
I've been exposed to it. And until you get in a bunch of gunfights where you can go, okay, yeah, what I'm doing clearly works on people.
Yeah.
Then you only have measured time in a competitive environment to actually check it.
Cause the reality in police work, we're not tier one dudes that are going out there and doing stuff where even those guys, when you really sit and talk to them, they're like, it's not every day is not just blasting people away and stuff like that. And so there is that, but in police world, I mean, if you're involved in an OIS, that's an oddity. If you're involved in 2-0, that's a really odd. And then you start getting the more involved, you're like, you're a fucking really unicorn. You're a really shit magnet. But so to say, hey, everything that I've done goes back to putting bodies down in real life situation, it's hard. So you do have to rely on the competition stuff. You do have to rely on pressure.
So
things like that.
Chris, let me ask you, since you're big into the competition shooting and now you're the range guy, how do you translate what you're talking about, like what you're learning through all the competition stuff, to the big department?
We've been fortunate. Like we were talking earlier about catalog classes and people who signed up to come down and train like in a group environment, 10 to 12 students with a fire instructor or two out there with them. And we'll demonstrate like hit factor scoring with them. But then we have an honest conversation where like, hey, let's just be honest. We've had a lot of OISs that ended successfully with a hit factor of fucking zero.
Yeah.
Right. So like a hit in the leg and the guy quits, or you shoot at the guy and he quits. Like that hit factor is zero, but you still technically won.
Yeah.
Right. Did you need to be sending rounds downrange? I don't know, but you chose to. And then like that decision-making process, that decision to use force, the ability to use force, they all combine together with push the shooting to the side. That's a skill set. Yeah. The decision-making process is another skill set, and understanding what you can do. And when you have confidence in both those capabilities, then you can put them together with higher accuracy, higher speed. And I hate saying speed, because I'm not trying to get dudes to shoot fast.
Yeah. Well, so the way that I kind of teach it, it's individual speed for whatever shooter, right? Because me and you can shoot faster than, say, you know, a new shooter that's only maybe like fresh out of the academy, never shot before, right? So are you teaching individual base speed?
Oh, yeah. So we push speed from the beginning with an exceptionally, high level of accuracy. So we'll show them, like, give me 7 yards, give me 2 rounds in the alpha, good. Give me 4 rounds in the alpha. Good. All right, we're fucking done. You can aim a gun. Like, there we go. You can shoot the alpha at 7 yards.
Yeah.
Now, which one, and we tell them it's almost like a game of Dungeons and Dragons. Like, this bad guy takes 15 points to stop. So we're going to roll our dice, right? Would you rather roll three fives in a row, or do you want to shoot fucking a bunch of Charlies?
Yeah.
Well, I'd rather get 3 rounds to end. Cool. How fast can you get that done? And we can go 2 alphas and a Charlie. All right. We're starting to get to the bleeding edge of where you're at currently.
Your breaking point.
How do we figure that out? And we don't need to push them to super speed. It's like, once it starts to fall apart, are you recognizing, like trying to teach them to recognize in themselves, where is it going wrong? I don't know. Then we need to slow the help and slow down, not slow down, get your hits, but we need to take a step back and figure out, how do I get you to understand what you're doing with the gun in this moment?
So where did you learn that from, as far as knowing when the wheels come off for each individual student? Where did you pick that up at?
I can only reference it from what I've had to do in my own journey. Like, I know when my wheels come off, what I just did.
Yeah.
And I go, okay, I know exactly what I did there. I had a shitty draw that was inconsistent with where I prefer my hand to be, and then my bitch hand came together in some weird angle, and I chose not to fix it because I wanted to be fast.
Yeah.
And what if I had invested like a half a second into fixing my grip, would it have made the whole thing better? So seeing where I've made my own mistakes, they're not universal, but it's like, I think it was Robbie that talked about it. Rob Latham was talking about, like, if this works for 90% of the best people in the world, there's a 90% chance of shit's going to work for you.
Right.
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 So I'm not a unique person. I don't have some magical way of shooting. Yeah. I shoot like most of the other people do who are successful. And there's probably a good chance it's going to work for you. Yeah. Left-handed or right-handed, these are the factors you have to have to make it work.
No, for sure. And I think for me, like learning the whole getting the wheels off to understand how I can get back into it being comfortable or not comfortable, successful for me, took a while, because in law enforcement, it's all about, hey, what kind of big hole can I make at the end of the day? Yeah. I can look over down the line like, dude, I don't have that fucking hole when I'm making it so big because I've been punching it. And then realizing that's good for fucking slow putting holes in paper. It's not practical. Yeah. And I think the light bulb came up for me when I started getting involved with TTPOA and seeing all that. I'm like, oh, dude, I've been fucking... This is messed up. And I also think, too, explaining a pack timer to a young shooter. I wish I'd have known that when I first started shooting. I thought it was, let's who fucking race. That's all it was. It was like, beep, let's who is the fastest on there? And not really drawing out what the metrics of all those little, you go up and you go down and you see the metrics of what this is what this means, instead of just, you're the winner. I think that was a disservice done to me, not intentionally. And also, I take ownership of it. I didn't invest in trying to figure out what
I will say that there's been a huge evolution in firearms training. Chris, how long you been on?
24
years. I've been on, 19, 20,
25,
15. I mean, even since like you and I started, 15, 19 years ago, there's been a huge evolution in firearms training, right? I mean, when I first started, we just stood there and we punched holes in papers, and we got further back and we punched holes in paper. And then, if you were hitting the paper or hitting the target okay, the instructors really didn't mess with you, because there's always one or two people in class that aren't. Right. So the instructor is always focused on those people. Right. I think now, if you look at the progression, man, you got old SWAT guys now going to the range. You got guys that shoot competitions going to the range. We have done a really good job of changing that dynamic on the range. Is there still time for standing there punching holes? Absolutely. With new shooters trying to learn their fundamentals, everything.
Yep.
Cool. But through in-service training, man, I know for us, we're progressing and getting more dynamic on some of the stuff that we're doing.
I think yes and no. I think if you look at, if we just take law enforcement in general, just the blanket law enforcement firearms training, we're behind the curve on bringing in the competitive side. It's happened a lot over the years. It's gotten better. But those competitive guys have been doing this a lot longer than we have. It's just, we have been ego driven. That's not for us. That doesn't apply to us. And it's taken guys jumping in that and trying to bridge that over. Even in the law enforcement training, there's departments around this country currently today that are not allowed to run red dots on their rifles. Not a lot. And even on their pistols. So that's one of those deals where we're still not even caught up.
No, yeah, I mean, you're right, but that's complete. That's that's failure on whoever's running that program.
I agree.
That's just they don't know.
And the reason why I say that is because for us, we have been very, very fortunate in the area that we live in, the state that we live in, the organization that we work for, and who we are, to reach out to different guys. I mean, and stuff. We've done that for a long ass time, but I would say, in general, we have to take those glasses off and go, hey, let's look at the nationwide. I mean, what do y'all think on that? What's y'all's opinion?
In my opinion, most law enforcement officers will not shoot unless they're forced to and required to do so. So they will not take it upon themselves to.
So that's my thing. When guys come to the range to shoot, they still somewhat like to shoot. It's not like going to the DT room and having to do DT. No one wants to fucking do that, right? So I feel bad for my DT instructors out there. But at least some people still like to shoot, right? And even though they still like to shoot, we're still forcing them to come to training. I get that, right? The thing that it's hard is like you guys want to be better. The civilians that are shooting these competitions, they want to be better, right? Not every cop wants to be a shooter.
Yeah.
And not every cop is a shooter, right? Because in the big department, you have cops that are better at community service, CID, investigations, or you know, undercover or whatever. You know, I mean, I get it, but...
Yep. But strip all that away, you know, you still might be put in a situation where you're carrying a gun on your 100%, head, right?
100%.
Yeah, that is a baseline skill set.
And they've never... But, you know, so, and again... It's never happened to me in 10 years, so therefore it's not going to happen.
Yeah. So how do we change it? How do we at this table, how would you change that? You were saying on service before when you walked in, hey, I did 13 plus years on SWAT, but my last few years at the range, I've influenced and been a part of true change in my department. So what have you seen? Like, I want to hear your perspective on that.
I think you have to, and like, I don't like, I got to back up for 2 seconds. Competitive shooting, I think in law enforcement, Mill, I think we need to start looking at it as performance-based shooting. Mm-hmm. Call it something different. If people get hung up on the word competition, let's call it performance-based. Yeah. Like just like driving, right? There's performance-based driving, and then there's the shit you do to go to the grocery store. The better you are at something, the higher your level of capability is, the more likely you are to be successful at it.
Yeah,
that's how I look at it. So like performance-based. And in my time at the range, it's... I have not changed anything. I feel like I've influenced though. Like if you can go somewhere and put out the best product and put out something where people look at it and go, shit, that's kind of cool. And you can show them really simple stuff in the very beginning to make their performance level jump dramatically.
Yeah.
Where they're like, oh my God, now that I figured that out, this is so much more fun. It's nice to come to the range. It's not a bunch of old dudes that are angry and treating me like shit. I actually enjoy coming. Maybe they will invest more time in it. But overall, like until law enforcement has gotten much bigger in the United States than it was in the 1940s, the men and women that, you know, I mean, there were a lot of women back then, but the people that were hired to do the policing job were hired for a different purpose. They were there very specifically to be the big cop that showed up at your house by himself and fixed all your problems or went out and got the bad guy in ones and twos. Until we start hiring people like job specific, like the military, everyone who is a cop now just needs to understand you are an armed professional. Mm-hmm. It is your job in the end to be an armed advocate for the community. Yeah. And that may include using a firearm. I know you want to be a detective and you would rather leave it in your drawer. But until we actually have those positions, where we're hiring people specifically into a financial crimes investigation unit that are civilians. Who cares if you have DT or a firearm? You're just here to investigate shit. You want to help old people get their money back? Hell yeah, I do. We can hire people to do it.
It's funny you say that. I had a conversation. This was years and years ago with a guy that was on our team and highly respect. And it was kind of along the same lines of like, hey, why don't in patrol you just have, like you have the green officers. They only answer report calls. They don't do anything else. They're not, they're safe. They're all this. And then we have like the yellow officers that do the traffic accidents. They'll go out and do this. There's a likelihood that they could get into some shit. And then we have like the red officers. Those are the dudes with the fucking meat eaters. And I'm like, that really, and it's kind of what you're talking about. Cause I look at it like, I look at CID. To be a CID guy, if you're just doing stuff behind the desk, and I don't say this as a shot because of the personality of what women do. They love to fucking dig. They love to talk. They love to investigate. I mean, you talk to any woman like, oh yeah, I watch this show. Watch this show. And it's one of those deals. I mean, I've had this conversation with my wife or other ladies. I'm like, dude, the shit that you think about and how you would dig, I would hate to have your ass to investigate me. I'm like, those kind of things are like, hey, people that have that personality, you come in and investigate, and then you hand it off to the meat eaters to go out and get the guy, or you hand it out to the meat eaters to go, hey, here's the operations we're going to do the surveillance, to do the tracking and all that kind of stuff. To me, like you said, that's a perfect, because that's what corporations do that fucking make money. Unfortunately, we don't make money, but we need to be able to be more efficient with fucking catching bad people. We're the bad people catcher. Other people don't care about that, but they're the people that put the puzzle together for meteors like us to go, I can't do that shit, but I can go do this shit. And I think you're right. It's like a football team, like you've said on a few months ago, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, so I look at it as every police department is like a football team. Like, you have to have different people, different mindsets in different positions to make that organization run, right? And absolutely, like, you have meat eaters and you have, you know, the more intelligent people that go to financial crimes, because I don't want to do that. I mean, there's no way I could do that. You put me over there, I'll be like, this is stupid. I need to eat my gun now.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, fuck, I can't even do 2+2. I can't even balance my own checkbook. Fuck.
I was born in this year. How old am I?
It's hard. Like, so we usually look at things from the lens of the department or the area that we work in, right? So 3,000 plus officers. We, you know, you can sit here and go, yeah, but this guy's a detective. He does this and that. But then you have agencies that have 6 officers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's where cops, I think, overall, we don't understand where other people's lens that they're viewing it comes from. Everybody needs to be a cop on the street first. And I'm like, what in the blue hell does doing 3 years in patrol teach you to be a child crimes investigator?
Yeah. It doesn't.
It doesn't teach you a fucking thing.
Yeah.
Well, it teaches you how to talk to people. Bullshit. Like, you can go take a class, learn how to talk to people. You, like, there's so much that we take our own ego and we look at ourselves, go, you got to be like me before you can do this. No, dude, like, every agency has its different size, its different capabilities and its needs. And I think they need to take a harder look at what affects the need for their community the most.
Yeah.
We're getting kind of,
I think a lot of it has to do with like the tradition.
I don't think we're getting off any topic at all.
Yeah. So the
tradition of the agency, right? So like, I come from an agency that you're required to do some time in custody and then you go out to patrol and that's like getting the stamp of approval when you pass patrol training. It opens up the doors for you to go to different places. But, it is what it is, but I see that as like a leadership issue, right? Looking at big picture, it's picking the right person for the right job. And I see that from like going back to SWAT as a team leader position, you're putting the right person in the right position based on their skills or their desires or their needs. And it's like, you see that from a leadership's perspective. And that's, I think it's on them to identify and pick those people that fit those roles and then not being like, oh, because it's tradition that you have to be in so many spots before you promote, like, okay, you're doing something you're loving, you're really good at, but let me throw you in this other spot that you're terrible at, but just because I need to check a box. And it's like,
yes,
no, this guy's phenomenal at what he's doing. Like, why do you have to pick him up and move him over here?
Or we
like,
have what's called that, it's where they move people around to get more exposure.
Yes.
So and their big excuse is it's to better your career.
Yeah.
Well, this is my career.
They do have a lot of people they promote.
Devil's advocate, I'll play on the opposite side, right? So like, I do think there's certain positions that we should have like subject matter experts they need to do the job in order to build a specialty in it. But then there is some that's like, hey, if like maybe you should be moved around a little bit and see like other aspects of what you want to do. You know, I'm not saying.
So I'm completely cool with that. But, so like one of our old admin chiefs, the previous chief, he made a policy because there wasn't a whole lot of movement, right? Because once you got to certain divisions, you just kind of stayed there. Yeah. And I get it. So he made like a policy, like five years, 7 years or whatever it was. And then you had a couple full-time permanent spots or whatever. And we're like, that's the, like for us and for like what we call capers, crimes against persons, the guys that investigate homicides and things like that.
We know what capers are.
You want like a subject matter expert. Yep. To actually do that job. You want, you know, your SWAT guy not to be a 5-year, 4-year guy, like your senior guy to be a 5-year, 4-year guy, because what does a 4-year, 5-year guy know?
Yeah.
Depending on, you know, op tempo and things like that. So,
well, I think too, it goes back to leadership in your department, investing in the people that you were quote over and you're leading because you know their strengths, you know their qualities, you're investing in them going, hey, you know what? I'm seeing a little change in you. Like, hey, what's going on? Hey, let me talk to you. Hey, is everything going on personally? What's going on? Are you burnt out? Like, do you need a change? Like, because there is times and I think that goes back to treating people as people and asking those questions. But people don't want to have fucking hard conversations. It's oh, that's toxic, or oh, I don't want to offend somebody, or this. I'm like, fucking have a conversation with me. Like, I mean, there's shit that goes on in everyone's life. There's seasons that happen. Find out, oh, I had no idea that your mom is battling cancer and your dad is this. I'm like, I had no idea. Okay, so how do we help you through this season? Yeah. That to me speaks more than fucking how much money I make. It just does.
That's like leadership 101. Yeah. That yeah. is kind of.
But that is fucking lost. Dude. So
let me ask you guys a question, kind of getting back to training.
Hold on, real quick. We have been very serious on this. There's been no humor, no butthole talk.
I know. Well, you just said butthole, so then I got to take a shot.
We probably do need to do Sons of Liberty, Guns of Work, like intro. Like
you did.
Oh, there we go. Hey, yeah, see? Hey, thanks, guys. Kyle and Mike. There we go. Shout out to y'all.
Sons of Liberty, awesome.
Back to dick and fart jokes.
By their guns.
Oh, shit. Now we're going to get dick and fart jokes. So, op tempo, we came from Chris. Pretty heavy, right?
Yeah.
Constantly doing stuff. How often were you guys, now this is a question for both of you, but how often were you training or changing things that you were doing with training that you were receiving or real life operations that you're like, holy shit, we've been doing it this way. We got to change this.
When I was on the team, we did not have a ton of outside influence.
Okay.
We would send dudes to the breaching circle, like our internal cadres, snipers, breachers, things like that. Would go out and get outside training to those very specific things. It wasn't necessarily integrated as an overall, like have a trainer come in. Mm-hmm. It's since changed. They've got dudes coming in doing very specific like hostage rescue courses mm-hmm. for the whole team. And it's bring it in, get the training. That's not going to work. We're going to keep doing what we're doing. Or bring it in, get the training.
Modify.
So. I get what this is. This may be more effective for what we're trying to accomplish based on the experience that we've had. The environment we work in and what we're actually capable of doing. And that's, I think, something a lot of people are missing is like, you have a group come in, you know, former tier one guys are saying, here's the way we're going to run hostage rescue, but without a firearms assessment, like, what are you actually capable of doing when you shoot? Mm-hmm. Can you shoot and move? How fast can you go? But this is the way we do it. And people just want to then do it that way when their baseline hard skill set does not support that tactic at all.
So this gets into like all of our conversations we have about training. Like, it's cool to bring these guys in to teach you, but what is your team composite?
Yeah.
What is your op tempo? How much training do you get? What's your skill set? What's your ability, equipment? I mean, all that shit goes into that. And what's your area of operation? The way that I train in a Metroplex, it's going to be different, or operations that I do is going to be different than a guy out in like West Texas. Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, I absolutely, I hate when guys bring people in and they're like, dude, we're going to change it and do this way.
Yeah.
Well, can you truly do that? I don't know. Right.
Yeah.
What about you, Gabe?
No, I agree. You have to have internal self-assessments and then bring people in to evaluate you guys. But yes, understanding that just because someone's coming in and telling you, hey, this is the best way to do it, are you even capable of doing it that way? And understanding where your team is at and how much training time do you have? Like 7 or 8 years ago, we started looking at a different style of movement. We were attached to the hip by a big brother agency that's very large and well known. And it's like, we just did everything they did and whatever they said was gospel. So that was our only influence. And then we had a time where it's like, okay, we're bringing in anyone and everyone to come in and train and see, you know, where we lie and what our capabilities truly are. And we decided to change, but there was definitely pushback and it took months and months of training and bringing in outside instructors and training the team before you've ever went live and changing any type of movement or SOP. Yep. So it's an understanding that the SOP has to work for your team. SOPs come from within, obviously getting that outside influence or other teams that you're working with. But
so how often are you actually evaluating the movements or things that you're doing and going, okay, we got it's time to change. The team has changed. The dynamics has changed on the team. Let's look at something that we can do better. Or have you had scenarios where you're like, oh shit, we thought this movement was going to be like the best movement, but if that guy really wanted to fight us, then we would have had one or two SWAT cops, you know, shot or dead.
So speaking specifically of movements, like we talk about, like you can't create a playbook for every single play, right? Yeah, so you have a standardization of simplistic tactics that you can apply to multiple situations. And if you start trying to create a playbook that's 300 pages long, you're going to have dudes that don't understand the playbook. So
yeah, you can't.
For us, it was just having something that's super simplistic that you can, you know, easily repeat in stressful situations and then see how it plays out, right? And then that's where the thinking portion comes in. But with that in mind, understanding that your hard skills are your foundation to even apply to that. So if you don't even have the hard skills, then how are you going to build up a standardization of mm-hmm. SOPs? So, it's just something that we go back and forth on. But just having that that baseline of a foundational skill and then bringing it to an SOP. But
Chris, what about you guys? Did you guys change a lot? I mean, like once you sent these guys out to bring the information back?
It had effect. We were fortunate, however you want to look at it, enough to have like several live hostage rescues with bullets getting shot all over the place. Mm-hmm. We've had our dicks kicked into the dirt by we can do this. This is good. And then it just goes sideways because it's the reality of the world. I'm sitting here looking at this hotel room, and we've done hostage rescues into hotel rooms with gun ports and bathrooms and through walls and multiple breaches. And the dog ended up biting one of our guys. The charge went off, locked all the doors that guys were locked in. There's all kinds of shit that can go on. We've got shot up through the walls, everything that you want to play on paint, everything that you see when it comes to just a baseline movement, what do you do? Oh, we do points of domination. What does that mean to you? We go hit this. Okay. When the room is on fire and it's completely filled with dust, what do you do? Well, why would that happen? Because it can.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Because
it does.
Shit can happen.
Right.
Really being able to actually do it, not on paint and not in a shoot house with the lights on and no doors are locked. Dudes making an honest assessment of their capabilities again is the problem. We think I'm on SWAT team, fucking awesome shooter, but you're not.
Yeah.
I'm an awesome driver. We did make a lot of, actually, get back to the question. We made a lot of assessments. We said, this is what we're going to attempt to do in training. Guys are hitting training every week. Is when you have free time, you're supposed to be down at the shoot house doing runs. You're trying to get it done monthly at least. I know they've actually pushed their training up more. Mm-hmm. The op tempo has not gone down. The stuff that's going on hasn't gone down, but the employment of the team to many things has gone down, where they're having other units handle smaller things. The vehicle interdiction stuff is still pretty high. The room entries, the hostage rescues, things that go like that are still just whenever the planets align the wrong way and you get them.
Yeah.
We've had super successful hostage rescues that didn't even end in a shooting, take a bad guy in custody, emptied a magazine of his AR through the wall at us as we came in and then ran out of ammo. But by the time our guys got to him and he just gave up.
Yeah.
And then we've just been lit up on different occasions, but I don't know. It's kind of rambling on down the road. The assessment part has to be made as an assumption until you do it for real, until you've actually been tested and opposed, you don't know what you're truly capable of.
Yeah.
And once you realize, this is the hard part, I think, once guys realize what they're actually capable of, you tend not to be able to get the same level of effort out of them. You've been shot and shot at them so many times, dudes start to be like, why the fuck am I getting shot at on a dope warrant trying to rescue the weed? Or why am I getting shot at trying to do this when we should have handled it as a barricaded subject? You can start what-ifing yourself to death, but the more guys get exposed to it in reality, the more that's when they start to actually understand when it gets real, it gets fucking confusing as shit.
Yeah.
We just watched the LAPD debrief and failed breach, open breach, tables in the way, dudes are falling down on the way into the door. And you don't want to make fun of them and do all that stuff, but we've done it. We had a crazy chick cover her whole entry with olive oil.
It was just
a crazy chick. And we're like, let's go get her. And we ate shit on the way in.
It's ice skating out there with that same thing. And I think too, it going back to changes and stuff like that, it's also understanding where your team is of, man, we lost a lot of veteran guys. Now we're having to fill that vacuum. And now we're having to invest in these guys to train them up. So right now we're not as capable as we were 6 months ago because of,
but
we lost experience.
I really, truly what Chris said is if you haven't done whatever it is that you're doing under that real world stress or real world Murphy showing up and squirting olive oil or the breach went off and locking the other door, you don't know how good you are or you're not.
No. And then you have experience of where you have guys who have done it and seen all the stupid shit. And then you have guys who have only trained it. And now you're having to mesh these guys together too. And you're
trying to explain to the new guys, hey,
you don't know what you don't know yet, little fella. You just don't.
I mean, it's as simple as me used to slamming doors back in the day when I first started. Hey, that's painted concrete in front of that door. So we're moving through the grass to get to that door. We're probably going to have dew or something, on our feet. Plant your feet. Don't try to hit it on the run. And then boom. Because I've fallen doing that. I busted my ass doing that when I was a new guy.
Yep.
And I'm trying to help you. Okay, don't listen to me. Guess what just happened?
Yeah.
So, I got it, old man. Go away.
Yep. No, you're right.
So Chris brought up the LAPD hostage rescue debrief that Eddie put on. And in 2017, their guys put together a hostage rescue symposium where teams from all over Southern California and other states were coming in.
We went to it.
Yeah, and it's pretty much this assessment of your team, right? You have some of the better teams in the United States coming out there and then all these scenarios are put together and everybody gets to watch and okay, handle the scenario. And then it's like, okay, you get a bunch of questions like, well, why'd you do it that way? Why'd you do it this way? And you're seeing a bunch of different ways of people, how they handle problems. And you're like, wow, like, are we messed up? Are they messed up? And it's like, but it was a good eye opener to one, get the community together to see where everybody's at and how people are thinking through problems, and then actually answering the whys to what you're doing. Like, well, why'd you do that? And it was a really good assessment for our guys to see that. It's like, okay, like,
how many feelings got hurt on that one?
It was awesome.
That was my first, that we went to that thing. Yeah. I think it was in Riverside or wherever it was at.
So it started in LA. Our guys hosted it the next year, and then it went to Riverside, San Bernardino. We're bringing it back this year.
We need to go out there as an association.
Yeah, dude, we went, and it was like, we got up on the catwalk and watched them do the runs in the shoot house. And afterwards I was like, what in the fucking hell was that? Yeah. Like, one of the team, I'm like, and so I got to ask them. And I went down and I said, hey, why'd you guys do this? Oh, that's how we do it. And it was the typical SWAT, that's how we do it. I'm like, well, you're a fucking idiot.
So I hate that. So either that's how we do it or that's how we've always done it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And one team's run, and it was the FBI, I don't know who it was, but it was super rehearsed.
Yes.
And like the bag, I had like an RPG or some dumb shit. And I'm like, and there's like four other people in there, and they did this dual entry, and everything was like very choreographed. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm just going to be honest with you.
Not realistic. Yeah.
Everything looked choreographed to me, and I don't think you would do that in reality. Well, that's how we would do it. We always do it this way. And I'm like, I don't think that's going to work.
Yep.
No. And I just told him, these are my experiences. These are things I've noticed. Like, when that dude takes off running in between the middle of you and shooting at one team, is the other team able to shoot him? Absolutely. Because we know our rounds are going to go where they go. And I was like, dude, I got to tell you right now, that's bullshit. Because the dude's 5 feet in front of your other guy shooting at them, and you're going to shoot at him. You're going to miss.
We've shot tons of fucking dudes and have through and throughs with a round that we're carrying. And
In the end, like, everything tactics, if in the end it is a shooting problem.
Yes.
Either you need to shoot or you don't. But if you do, it's a shooting problem. Mm-hmm. How good are you at shooting? Like, it is the end all. That is the end goal thing.
And it's a shooting and a thinking problem.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, but I see them both.
A lot of times teams are so concentrated on, well, tactics. What's our tactics? Let's go straight to tactics. Or we start bringing in instructors. It's like, well, let's bring in this tactics instructor. Let's look at this and that. And it's like, how about we bring in a pistol shooter or a rifle shooter and just work on our fundamental skills? And they're like, that's the easy stuff. Like, we don't want to do
it?
That.
It's,
I know,
but
it's not.
It's
like, not. Okay, let's put you on it. Like, and like, speaking specifically on my team and getting together for the range and stuff. Yeah. It's like, for the longest time, it was just come to the range and we just shoot drills and drills and drills. And it's like, who's doing any exploratory drills that you're trying to actually improve individually? Yeah. If you're not going outside of our team training, dude, you're either stagnant or just maintaining a status quo that's never improving.
Because any operation, it's 80% of what, give or take, could be 79, could be 81, whatever. But 80 is a easy number to talk about. But 80% of what you're going to do is playbook, SOP, this is our tactic. That other 20% is the fucking thinking man's game, like Dan talks about. It's that thinking. I don't know what the fuck it's going to be. It's the pickup basketball game. Once I hit that door and it's go time. That's that 20%. That's why I always want thinkers in the shooters, because all that hard skills of shooting and the thinking of just, I can't fucking teach anybody to think. I can teach them understand, hey, here's training and that you experience that. But at the end of the day, common sense is common sense. I can't fucking train you in that. And so that 80% is all good. It's great. You got to have the rules, but you also have to understand that 20% is getting outside of those rules and understanding we're going to get outside of those rules.
But you got to be exposed to the game at game speed.
It fucking is so
right? Because
fucking fast.
Like, we got some dudes that have like really smart, really good common sense, and then training good. You know, because training, you're not going to get, shot for real, whatever it is. And then, dude, come like real game, you're like, what the fuck did just happen?
Yeah. Yeah. And you get, so like, I'm just going to say 3,000 search warrants. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably a conservative number of what I've actually served. I have never shot anyone on a search warrant.
Yeah.
So I've entered thousands of rooms with people in them, like rooms with like 12 people in it. And you're like, hello, everybody. And they're like, hey.
And there's guns laying everywhere.
Yeah. Fucking everybody's just chilling and doing their thing. I've been shot at a bunch on search warrants. Mm-hmm. We've had dudes with guns running around on search warrants. We've shot dudes on search warrants. I just haven't had to.
Yeah.
And it's like the LE mill world with the LE wanting the mill trainer, but not understanding where they came up with their SOPs and where they came up with the why that they do it.
Yeah.
How do you use it? Because it is valuable. How do you use it to apply it to what you're doing? And it's the unopposed typical LE thing that gets into the world of, yeah, dude, I've done a bunch of search warrants. I'm like, yeah, but has it ever gone sideways?
Right.
Like, I made a joke in a briefing And they're like, this guy's a cartel member. He's high level. He's this whatever. And I was like, you're going to skin that smoke wagon or sit in there and bleed. And I made a joke about it prior to do it. Well, he fucking started shooting at us through the door on the breach. So the first couple rounds go out through the screen, the security screen and the door.
Yeah.
Pop the security screen door and he's still shooting. Breach the door with a ram like, fuck it. And he's standing there on the other side of a Miss Pac-Man machine with dual-wielding 1911s. Like, it was like a movie.
So he threw
a bang at his face.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, Chris, shut the fuck up, Chris. Yeah. Don't fucking ever talk ever again.
We get done with the breach, and I'm sitting there with a bang, and I freaking like, holy shit, I just threw the bang at him.
Yeah.
Because my point guy didn't shoot him. I'm like, well, you know, afterwards, like, why the fuck didn't you shoot him? He's like, he had the guns down. I'm like, fuck him.
Yeah, he's
like,
already
shot at us.
Boom, it goes off, and he's like, and he proned out, and we took him into custody. And it was just one of those things where, oh, it worked out. No, it fucking...
I hate that. It worked out. I do too.
It worked out. Like, that's not a good tactic. You got lucky it worked out. And you're right. But I love that you can sit here and humbly admit, we dropped the ball on this one. I mean, and I think you have to be able to be better. You have to be able to say that. Like, there's shit I look at, I'm like, why in the fuck did that happen? We got lucky. Yeah. I'm not saying that was our good tactic. It's just we got fucking lucky for years on doing what we did or doing this and doing that and stuff. So you can't get better with what we did is good, and so we don't need any critique. You know,
yeah. You're always
you have to have that self-assessment. You can never have a perfect operation.
I don't know any operation that we've done that's been so successful that I've looked back and go, it was perfect. It was flawless. I mean, I look at things, I'm like, man, I wish I'd have thought about that. Or, damn it, why didn't I think about that? Or, well, how did I not see this on the drive-by? Or when I went in the room, I watched the video, I'm like, how did I not see that thing? Like, and it didn't matter.
Yeah.
But it fucking mattered to me and stuff. So.
Yeah, we had, I mean, just like works out well is low level. And, you know, if you look at a low level warrant, like forging driver's license, right? Who cares? Like, this guy's going to be a punk. It's easy.
Yeah.
Family comes out. He doesn't come out. So they're at a breach and hold on the door with a break and rake on the window to the left of it. They throw a recon in, drive it around down the hallway, and dude's waiting in the bedroom with a pistol. Mm-hmm. And he's like, shit. So he sees that. He's like, all right, here he comes. So he comes down the hallway and surprises the dudes at the door. They're leaning out around the sides of cover. He's only freaking 3 yards away, and both of those dudes missed. Hit the drywall. Because he's right there on the corner. Yeah. Height over bore, all these little issues that pop up in reality when you have intermediate barriers that guys don't fucking pay attention to, actually has it, and he has to get shot by the guy in the window. Stops it. You know, everybody's safe. Unfortunately, this guy has to die, but he's the one that made the choice to come out armed and assault the team. We've had the other ones where I've thrown a recon down a hallway and found a guy, same thing, pistol, and he's like, well, shit. And he throws the gun away, and then he walks out and gives up after a breach.
Yeah.
It, like, there's so many little things in reality that when you start shooting guns in a real environment, get in the way. These microphone stands will be in the way of a bullet of someone sitting on a chair over here. The corner of a build, like the corner of a wall, when you're trying to lean out and shoot, will get in the way, hide over bore, when you're talking about intermediate distance stuff and a house plant.
And bullets do weird shit.
And that's one of my pet peeves when I watch people do CQB is when they cant the rifle. And I'm like, okay, you realize you're canting the rifle. And you're fucking your own offset up. Just you doing that. Like, keep it up as best you can. The most, and it just drives me. And then I never thought about that. I'm like, you'll think about it when you're fucking shooting and you're not getting their desired
shooting sims are a little different than shooting live ammo too. So
there's a lot of brave warriors out there.
You see a lot of shit that would never happen if somebody's shooting real fucking rounds at you with sims.
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah.
And I'm fucking dangerous as shit on sims. I'll get you.
Yeah. That's right. I don't feel that shit, or you know, I think there's a value in that, but there's also let's tap the brakes on how much value we want to put in when we're shooting. Especially, I see that big on vehicle stuff, because the reality is, if you're shooting in or around a vehicle, there is fucking glass flying everywhere. I mean, you just do a rake and break on a fucking window. I don't care how much PPE you have on. You're fucking getting glass when you take your shit off. I mean, yeah,
cuts all over.
I mean, they're everywhere. Those little, it's like fucking sand at the damn beach. Yeah. You're gonna go, if you go to the beach, you're fucking getting sand. If you're breaching a window on a car, you're gonna have some fucking glass when you take your clothes off or whatever. You're like, motherfucker, how'd that happen? So to tell me you're gonna be in a shooting in an automobile, and there's going to be glass flying, or you're shooting a fucking metal deal, there's no telling what type of things or bullets are going to happen. dude, let's be realistic with this, because, man, we can do all kinds of hero shit with sim munitions around vehicles. And that drives me fucking crazy because, oh, yeah, well, I stood behind this and it didn't hit me. Well, no shit, motherfucker, because the window
is... You're taking cover behind a piece of fucking cardboard. I get
so,
it.
So, and that drives me crazy. And I think that's where we have to tamper some of the training to go, okay, what's the real value we're getting out of this? And what's the just for shits and giggles, this is not reality and stuff.
And so. it goes even further, not just with cars, but inside a house. And you start playing paintball with guns, and it's like, again, you wouldn't do that if there's consequences to you getting shot, right? Yeah. Like, I think it's understanding what the training value is and putting things into perspective of, hey, what's actually realistic?
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's hard, too. It's a hard balance because there's operational experience, there's levels of training, there's the team dynamics, there's okay, what's this team capability? I probably have around 400 people come to Region 7 in a year, and they're from all over the country, and man, different skill sets, different setups on rifles, different gear, different philosophies and shit like that, and it's just it's interesting. That's where law enforcement is so hard to kind of gauge sometimes, because it's all over the board. Like military, okay, you're in this branch of the military. This is the fucking way we do it. If you don't like it, suck it up, because we're going to teach you how to like it. If not, you're fucking gone. And that's not the word in policing, because four different agencies here, I guarantee you, all their SOPs are pretty similar, but they're fucking different and all in the same breath. And so that's where it's hard to gauge. And we try to do the best we can with bringing in people and going, hey, this is what you got to choose. This is what works for you and stuff. And that's why we like having guys like you from around the country. We have West Coast. We have, I don't know what you consider Arizona. I don't know.
Like, it's West Coast.
There you go.
Southwest.
There you go. Coast. We don't have on the east side. So sorry, guys. But, you know, that's just when you call someone up and you got 10 minutes to get up here. What I love about this, I think this is a very good podcast. It was fucking SWAT guys doing SWAT shit. It's like a call out. And I even said, hey, it's like a call out, man. Come up here. Here's what we're going to talk about, basically, and we have no script. So let's go. Because I listen to y'all, and I'm like, dude, they're so much smarter than me and you.
Oh, no doubt smarter
like,
than you.
You are two very intelligent
no
men.
No doubt smarter than me.
But I like it because I like talking with men that have conviction.
Yeah, I bet you do.
I love talking with men. Like, yeah, our last podcast, I think y'all said I like dick or something like that. So, but I love talking with men and women.
As he puts his Bud Light
down. Yeah. Got him.
I did get a good Mexican meme of the day. Real quick, let me read that about Bud Light. I love those things. It was Mexican word of the day, Budweiser. They say she's a woman, but Weiser pants look like she has a burrito in it. So I love that kind of shit. But I love being able to talk with people, him, they, she, whatever you want to call it, whatever you identify as, but have put thought and into why they do what they do and can explain why they do what they do. And also understand that there's more to it than just here's the door, fucking breach the door, go in and do shit. I value that.
It's like both of you guys have become students of the craft. And
you're students, always, but you're also instructors.
And you're kind of that professor now, right?
Yes.
But it's like, you know, that's what we want. We want guys that put the time and effort in to try to be the best, whatever it is that they can be.
Hey, let's talk about the, what we talked about real quick. Y'all's, department does the different quals. We talked about that with Matt Little a bit. So fill me in what you were talking about, when we're standing by the kitchen, as far as we have two quals, what that looks like, what the metrics is, why you came up, or not you, but why you are doing that. Cause I think it's very interesting.
So I wrote that up, last year before. So maybe it might've been about 2 years now we've been doing it. We call it distinguished marksman.
Okay.
Had to get a name on it. And the reason or the idea behind it was incentivizing performance shooting, like incentivizing the desire to be better at something.
Okay.
So how do you incentivize people? I was like money, time,
yeah.
Right? Some people are driven by money. So couldn't give them money, but I can give them time. So I can give them a shift of performance recognition leave. So they can get a 10-hour, hours off, which is, when you think about it in terms of money, it's money. But it's a shift of performance recognition leave if they shoot at the distinguished standards. So it isn't anything mind-blowing. It is challenging enough, but it's we had to find a way to accomplish it logistically that doesn't add time and take away from anything else. So we just have the standard qual, right? Your post-qual. In that qual zone is this big-ass gray freaking rectangle that counts as the body, and anything into that is a hit, right? Mm-hmm. So we took it from that to there's a 4-inch circle in the center of it. It's gray. You can't see it, but it is outlined a 4-inch circle. Mm-hmm. And outside of that's an 8-inch circle. I said, how about we just leave the qual alone? And instead of shooting it to, let's just see if I can hit it, you're shooting it now to a smaller standard. So a 4-inch circle in the chest and a 2-inch circle in the head. 25 yards, everything is the same. Times are the same, but now your accuracy standard has been shrunk drastically.
Yeah.
Anything outside of the 4 is a miss. Anything outside of the 2 in the head is a miss. So you're losing points. So full value points for the main scoring zone. Mm-hmm. Out of that into the 8-inch circle is minus 1 point. Out of the head 2 into the 4-inch circle is minus 1 point. Anything outside of that's a miss.
Okay.
Anything that hits off the standard scoring zone is a DQ.
Okay.
So you have a 210 points is the AZ post-qual score. Okay. 250 is the max, right? So you got to shoot a 250 AZ post-scored, and then you have to shoot a 210 to a 250 based on the new scoring system within it.
Okay.
So the best so far is a 247, so three rounds out of the 4-inch circle. But if you get a 210 with that scoring zone, everything is very tight in the high chest.
Is that dot or iron sights on the
anything they're shooting?
No, on the 247. Is that a dot guy or a red?
I shot that with a irons. Or excuse me, with a dot. My best ever on irons is a 240. So 10 right, one minus five, and then the other.
So if you shoot over a 210, you get that 10 hours off. Okay.
So that way, it doesn't take from anything. It's it has to be your very first attempt of the year when you come out to shoot your qual. You're shooting for distinguished or whatever it is. So we score it. If it looks tight, we'll score it for distinguished. If you it, we'll put two scores on, 250 for your AZ post, and then whatever you scored for distinguished, we'll put it in there. I put it all together. We send a memo off to their command saying, hey, they've been awarded a 10 hours of PA
time. That's awesome.
So it's and it changes year to year, but 3 to 5% of the department.
I'm going to try to steal that from you. Okay with that?
Yeah, I'll send you the.
Would you please?
Yeah. Why do you think I have these guys on?
But it gives, I think we'll get into it here in a minute, but guys, when they heard about it, it started its own fucking cop problem. Like, hey, I shot distinguished last week and I haven't got my time yet. Well, motherfucker, it's once a month. And like in the very beginning, people didn't quite understand how it works. So there was a delay and it took some time, but now we've kind of refined the process. Yep. But yeah.
So we get paid extra money for PT standards. So we have like a sort of like a three-tier PT standard and you get like extra money a month or whatever it is. But I would love to try to get, you know, just a 12-hour shift off. I mean, that'd be awesome for dudes.
And it gets buy-in from guys that it motivates them to want to
Get better. It motivates them to get better and to kind of, you know, pay more attention and try to understand why we're trying to get these guys to do what we're asking them to do. So, man, this is actually going really good. Chris, real fast, we talked about in the kitchen earlier, going from SWAT to the range. What are some struggles that you had? Because I know I had my own going from SWAT to the range.
I'll be honest, when I first got there, I was like, yeah, this is cool. I'm going to do this. But I missed, I still want to go find a motherfucker and punch him in his head.
Yeah.
But that losing the dudes, they're still around, but not hanging out with the dudes, being in a new environment, not being active. Like, you're like, I can't do this anymore. My brain is going to melt.
Yeah.
And then the moment you aren't doing it anymore, your brain's like, why the fuck aren't we going out and having fun? Like, why aren't we freaking jumping off of buildings anymore? What can we do that's exciting? And it's hard. So you start trying to find other routes, but toning it down was hard. And then dealing with other people who in general are not achievers. They're negative Nancys on everything.
That was kind of my biggest hurdle to overcome was the negative attitudes towards training. Cause you know, you go from like the SWAT side of the house where for the majority, most of the training we do, the guys you're into and, you know, and it is what it is because they know and they understand why and they want to get better at it. And then having to deal with the big department and you're like, man, guys, this is a skill set that could save your fucking life or save my life or a civilian's life. Why are you not trying? And then I realized, I was like, holy shit, they are trying.
Yeah.
They are trying. They're just not.
I think most are trying. And then I think some just don't give a shit.
Yeah.
They just genuinely don't fucking care.
Yeah. And honestly, it's it's hit and miss if it's the older crowd or if it's the younger crowd. I mean, we've got some old dudes, and I get it. They're, you know, 30 plus year dudes, and they're just like, fuck, I've never been in a shooting 30 years. Not going to happen to me. I get it. Or they're in that financial crime division and their gun is literally in the fucking desk drawer. I get that too. But what kills me is the younger crowd, the dudes that are there like less than three, you know, 3 to 5 years, and they, and like, you're too new to be fucking negative. You're too new not to give a shit. Like, how is this happening?
Yeah, yeah, right.
Well, they usually get infected by the, we always call it the senior Lance Corporal, right? They get to their first, their first squad, and they got the dude who's been on like a whopping 2 years, and everyone's out, fuck PSB, you know, fuck internal affairs. They're out to get you. Don't do this. Don't do that. Just follow me. Don't answer this. Yeah. Slow down. And no, dude, that guy's a slug.
He's a slug and he's a fucking cancer.
Yeah. He's a slug. Don't listen to that guy. Yeah. Go have fun. Yeah.
Well, guys, we'll be going for about an hour and a half. So we're about to wrap it up, and we'll ask you guys one final question. All right. So our motto is train hard. So Gabe, what does train hard mean to you?
It means actually having buy-in to what you do, like taking it serious. And just because the department's not sending you, it's not putting time and effort into you, put that time and effort into yourself, invest in yourself, go out and seek training on your own. You can't just rely on an agency or an organization to build you up. You have to do it yourself, just like they do in the private sector, right? Like, you only improve by investing in yourself. So train hard means put that effort in to train yourself.
So. Chris?
Yeah.
I mirror that completely.
You can't copy his answer. Oh,
I know. I'll just be like dead frank. Stop being a lazy fuck. Stop being self-centered.
I like that.
Just understand that this is your job. It's your profession. It's what you're expected to do. Lawyers, doctors, everybody else who's in a profession has to do continuing education and training on their own to better themselves, to meet new standards. If you're an executive, or if you run an agency, or you have the horsepower in the position that you're in to make change, you just need to raise the standards. Most cops, right? There are shitheads in every fucking, there's shithead ditch diggers, there's shithead garbage men, there's shithead cops. They're just not shitheads. They're lazy.
Yeah.
If you raise the standard, most will just meet it with very little effort. Yeah. All you got to do is raise it, and they go, what do I got? Okay, fine. I got to do B now. Fine. I'll do B. Yeah. And they'll do it. If you keep lowering the standards so no cop is left behind, they fall behind. Ignoring all that, as the single dude, if you're listening to this podcast, just ask yourself honestly, am I capable of delivering effective force if I'm required to do it to save someone else's life or your own? Yeah. Fuck yourself. Stop thinking about, is it safe for me or dangerous for me? Think about the community and what you're actually expected to do. Little simple shit that I get pushback from cops on, like, we changed our rifle qual up. Mm-hmm. Our patrol rifle qual, you got to run 20 yards. I got based it off of Matt's class for CQB assessment. I toned it down a bit, but it's still there. And I had dudes argue with me about, why do I got to run 20 yards? I'm like, you mean like from your car into the school? Like, it ain't asking too much, right? So accept the standards, push the standards up, and take it upon yourself just to be a little bit better. If you dry fire 5 minutes a fucking day,
that's better than anything.
You way ahead of anybody else. And just look at one less video on Pornhub. Do whatever it is you're going to do. Freaking go dry fire.
Nope.
Simple shit. It's easy.
Chris, I will give you 5 minutes, but I'm not giving up videos on Pornhub. Fine.
Well, he's not giving conversations on Grinders, what he's talking about.
Whatever. That's his deal. Whatever.
So, hey, so Chris, if someone wanted to train with you or whatever, how would they hook up with you?
I'm not doing any training right now. 532 okay. Insight.
So where did that name come from? I haven't asked you that. What's that? What's that about?
Those are numbers that have just been all over my life. Like, boot camp platoon was 2035. My academy class was 325. My call sign was 532.
Okay.
It's just
combination of all that.
Yeah. Okay. They've been all over the place.
Okay. Awesome.
Gabe, someone wants to train with you. I know you have a training company as well.
Yeah. So I have a training company. I don't really do too much with it, honestly. I have some California Post pistol classes and active shooter stuff in California. But for the most part, I try to get out with Dan as much as I can, travel yourself. But Mindset Tactical is a company in Southern California, and we have a few post classes. But in all honesty, with time restrictions, I'm not doing that very often. So,
we actually have a lot of listeners from California, so you may get some business off this.
Yeah. So you're on, what's your Instagram handle, Chris?
532 Insight LLC.
In game?
G Rivera 05.
There you go, guys.
Gabe, you're OnlyFans.
And I'm shadow banned. Like,
and the thing is it's funny. So me and Gabe know each other through through Dan Brokos with the Lead Faucet, and you know, we've trained together with him, big classes and stuff like that. So we keep in touch. We last few conferences and things like that. Chris and I met, I think, just through Ben and Prankin and all that, and Panone just doing Redneck Lives podcast and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's the good part of the whole Instagram deal. You know, I call Chris up. I'm like, I've never met Chris in my life. We've had conversations via text and DMs, and all of a sudden, hey, pop up, let's do a podcast. And I think that's what's great with the networking and just the SWAT community yep. in general and the police community. Derek was like, who the fuck are you bringing up here now? I'm like, just trust me. but I think I look back on this and just what we had. I think this is going to be one of those podcasts that we're very proud of. And
the only reason I was worried about who was coming up here, man, the strippers he brought up last time, right?
The midget strippers.
Like, dude, the midget amputee strippers that he brought up, I was like, dude, we could do way better. Yeah. He's like, no, this is what I'm into, brother.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, brother. I like the midget. The macho man likes the midget. Yeah.
All right, boys and girls, we're out of here. Stay safe. Train hard.
Train hard.